It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
One, it was over before it began. Football season kicked off, and football season is over. Two, the debut of Will's weekly quarterback depth chart. Three, don't let stories fade away into the night. Let's not allow hit-and-run journalism. Let's revisit one of the biggest hoaxes in media history. Let's revisit the truth around COVID with the host of The Truth, with Lisa Booth. It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome to Wednesday. We've got a big show for you today. I want to do something that makes me very passionate. I want to hold, yes, people, yes, the media, hold the narrative to account. I want accountability. One of my biggest pet peeves, something I hate, is hit and run journalism. Stories that do their damage and then slip away quietly into the night. I mean, there's so many examples of this. I won't be able to rattle them all off. But I mean, a great example of this is there was the kid at the Chicago Cubs baseball game a good couple years ago, who no one knows exactly what he was doing, but all probability led you to understand he was probably playing the circle game. You know, the circle game where kids make essentially a circle with their thumb and index finger and they get other kids to look at it. By the way, when you make that symbol, the other three fingers on your hand stand out. It's the okay symbol known around the world. But for some reason, during the fever of racism from 2018 to 2020, it became a symbol of white supremacy. So anyone caught playing the circle game, any teenager, any college student, any West Point Academy member, was branded a white supremacist, branded a member of the KKK if they were ever caught playing the circle game. Well, this kid in the stands of Wrigley Field was caught behind Doug Glanville broadcasting playing the circle game. He was immediately branded a racist. He was banned from Wrigley Field. The GM of the Chicago Cubs, Theo Epstein, said it made him shudder. Well, of course, there was never any accountability for that story, never any truth sought out, just hit and run, damage, wreckage, chaos, and then silence. We've never spoken to or heard from that kid. The probabilities were never really entertained. He was simply a white supremacist. And the story is gone. There are so many of these stories. And there was no greater category for the font of these stories than with COVID. COVID origins is simply the territory of right-wing nut jobs, COVID conspiracy theorists. And then some evidence comes forward showing it's not just a probability, not just a possibility, but almost inevitably true that COVID came from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And poof, gone is accountability. COVID vaccine efficacy. Oh, it's 99% effective, then 70, then 60, then 45, then 25. Then who knows what? 0% effective in stopping transmission. Not only is that story not gone, you can hear the White House press secretary this week offering up an updated vaccine that keeps you from, quote, getting sick. Whether or not it's COVID or race or whatever it may be, any host of stories about former President Donald Trump, hit and run, carnage, chaos, and damage, and then no accountability. Virality and screaming from the rooftops, and then silence. I don't want to do that. I want to revisit some of our updated information when it comes to COVID, the efficacy of the vaccine, whether or not it's appropriate for children. And I want to do so with someone who is at the forefront of this fight. Lisa Booth, a Fox News contributor, the host of Truth, The Truth with Lisa Booth, will be my guest today after we take a lap around the world of sports. Story number one. I don't think I've ever had a season end this early. I don't think I've ever been depressed this quick. Football season kicked off, and then before you know it, we were in the off season. I can usually mark the success of a football season, a professional football season, by how early I look at a mock draft. Love the draft. Play mock drafts, not year-round, but easily 6 months of the year. It's a successful football season if I don't look at mock drafts or play mock draft simulators until January. It's September, and I'm about to dive in to the 2023 NFL draft because the Cowboys are horrendous. And that was before they lost their quote-unquote franchise quarterback. Sunday night, I went to the Cowboys game. It was an awesome experience. I hung out with Lawrence Jones, our buddy from Fox News. I hung out with one of our friends who's a security guard, a New York police officer, who's a big Cowboys fan, and his friends and cousins who are in law enforcement in New York. I hung out with a host of Army Special Forces badasses, a box dedicated to Green Berets. And the experience was awesome. The game, as you know, was absolutely terrible. Look, the season is lost. Dak Prescott broke his thumb. He's out for, it looks like, what, 6 weeks, 8 weeks? I mean, you're not going to do well with Cooper Rush as your starting quarterback. So the season is lost. Here's what's more concerning. The quarterback, Dak Prescott, was bad. Indefensively bad on primetime television. Now, I have, both out of my objectivity in my mind and the burning passion of my heart, defended Dak Prescott for years in the face of bad primetime, big national television exposure appearances. And I can't break the narrative. I can't break the narrative that people say he's a mediocre game manager. I have believed, and I've had objective stats to back me up, that that's simply not true. But I'm running out of runway, Dak. The plane is not taking off. That was such a horrible performance by Dak Prescott on Sunday night that it's not only the season that's lost, and this brings me no joy to say this, but you have to ask if not only the season was lost, not only the quarterback was lost, but whether or not the franchise was lost. Are the Cowboys a listless franchise now without an objective and identity, without a franchise quarterback? That's what you build your franchise around. Do you have a franchise quarterback? There's two kinds of franchises in the NFL. Those that do and those that don't. If you have the franchise quarterback, you build around him. You're on the path. The train's left the station. You are at varying speeds, chugging along. If you don't have a franchise quarterback, you're John Travolta in the meme from a Quentin Tarantino movie. Pulp Fiction, standing around going, looking side to side. What's happening around me? Where do I go? The Cowboys are in the middle of the party going side to side with John Travolta. Where do we go? I don't know. I'm really worried about the franchise. And I will tell you, all throughout my career and my personal life, I have said, you know, one thing I appreciate is that my teams in Dallas have owners that care about winning. That doesn't mean they're always good at it. And that doesn't mean their personalities are always the most charming, whether or not it's Mark Cuban or Jerry Jones. But I do have to wonder, with the way the Cowboys spent their offseason not upgrading, only downgrading their roster along the offensive line, at wide receiver, spending no money, am I getting hoodwinked? Is this a snake oil salesman job? Have I, for the better part of 20 years, believed something that's not true? That Jerry Jones cares about winning a Super Bowl. Is that only a pretense in order to continue to perpetuate the marketing cash machine that is the Dallas Cowboys, most valuable franchise in professional sports? Does he, do they care about winning a Super Bowl? I'm afraid not only have I lost my season, my quarterback, possibly my franchise, but I'm losing some hope. And I don't care if it's a reaction to one game. That is how I feel. By the way, 25 million. That's how many people watched Sunday Night Football. It's the highest rated Sunday night football game since 2015, which also featured the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys and Bucks, 25 million viewers. You want some TV ratings really quickly? It's always fun when it comes to sports. CBS's late game window, Chiefs Cards, 16 million. Not bad. Not great for CBS. Fox knocked it out of the park. Packers Vikings, 18 million. Up big from a year ago. Also, by the way, their early window, their noon central, 1 o'clock Eastern games, up significant percentages from a year ago. Fox knocked it out of the park. And then, as I said, NBC, big improvement, as is the case with Jerry Jones's cash registering marketing machine, as is the case with the Dallas Cowboys. 25 million. By the way, while we are talking about football, let's go around the horn really quickly. Outside of the Cowboys, in both the NFL and in college football. In the NFL, on Monday Night Football, what was Nathaniel Hackett, the Denver Broncos head coach, thinking? 4th and 5, 50 seconds left on the clock, 3 timeouts, Russell Wilson at quarterback, and he elects to bleed the clock and attempt a 64-yard field goal for the win, which, of course, he misses. Is the record still held by the half-footed dude? What was his name? Was it Tom Dempsey? Half-footed dude, wore a funny boot, been around for like half a century, the record is 63 yards. I don't know if that ever has gotten broken. But we're in the range here for Brandon McManus. 64 yards when you've got Russell Wilson, 3 timeouts, and 50 seconds on the clock. Everyone, and I don't like joining crowds of everyone. I don't like it at all. In fact, I've challenged myself today. Could the Cowboys season actually end up good? Because they're getting crushed by everyone on ESPN and national media. And usually, everyone is wrong. If there's a group where everyone is in it, it's headed in the wrong direction. And so I challenged myself, are the Cowboys actually going to have a better season because everyone believes one thing? I couldn't find a good reason to say that everyone was wrong. Everyone thought Hackett was wrong. And once again, I think everyone was right. You put the ball in the hands of Russell Wilson. On Monday, we broke down some college football. We talked about Texas, Alabama. A quick, for what it's worth, Texas, Alabama, 10.5 million viewers at a noon kickoff Eastern. I believe it's the highest rated game, certainly of the season. I can't remember. Is it the highest rated game in the history of Fox? That's not true because I know this. It's the 4th highest rated regular season college football game. The 3 above it are all Ohio State, Michigan. And Fox has had the Big Ten, I believe. So I think all of those games would have aired on Fox. The point is, we're talking about historical proportions when you have two historical programs facing off against one another. 10.5 million people for Texas versus Alabama. Here's what I think is fascinating to take away from the college football weekend. The underdogs and the upsets. 3 games in particular. Baylor, BYU, Notre Dame, Marshall, Texas A&M, Appalachian State. All big upsets, all big wins by the dogs, and I wanted to put it into context for you how big. In fact, let's back engineer it on which one of these 3 is the biggest upset based upon 24/7's talent composite index. This is where 24/7 takes a look at the entire roster based upon recruiting stars, 5-star, 4-star, 3-star, who's got the best roster. And then it ranks every program in college football. For example, third biggest upset according to this estimation would be BYU versus Baylor. Now, BYU is actually a top 25 ranked program, but on the talent index, BYU comes in at 107. Baylor came in at 41. That's a delta of 66 spots. Baylor 41, BYU 107. The team with the roster whose talent could only register 107 takes down the Baylor Bears. At number 2, Marshall, talent ranking of 89. Notre Dame, 10. 79 spot differential there. It is fascinating. And look, recruiting doesn't always approximate how a kid develops, how a coaching staff brings somebody along, how somebody improves. It's not always the way they came out of high school is the way they end up playing in college football. But it does. Look, Alabama and Ohio State are usually 1 and 2 on the talent index monitor. And you know what? Alabama and Ohio State are usually right there at 1 and 2. Georgia, same thing. Those are basically your top three programs in talent. And they're basically your top three programs in college football. But Notre Dame-Marshall wasn't the biggest upset of the week, according to this metric, with a 79-spot delta. The biggest upset of the weekend was Appalachian State, Texas A&M. Appalachian State's roster registers at number 96 in talent. And Texas A&M comes in, well, behind Alabama, behind Georgia, behind Ohio State, at number 4. A&M, the fourth best roster, according to 24/7, in college football, lost to a team with the 96th best roster. You can do the math. The differential is 92. That's a stunning loss for the Aggs that not even I would wish upon them as a TSIP. As a Longhorn fan, I do not wish this. I know there's a lot of Texas fans that are taking joy in that loss. I don't. I'm a capitalist. I'm a rising tide lifts all boats guy. I'm a Texan. I want all of them to be good. I want Baylor and TCU and Tech and A&M and Texas. I want all of them to be good. And then I want to have knockdown, drag out fights like in the SEC. I want nothing like this to happen, even to my biggest enemy. I'm sorry, Ags. I'm really sorry.
Don't go anywhere. More of the Will Cain podcast right after this.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
Story number 2. Will's weekly quarterback depth chart. Here, 1 week in, is your inaugural Will's Weekly Quarterback Depth Chart. Your top 5 quarterbacks in the NFL. Just missing the cut, just outside the top 5, I give you 3 quarterbacks. 2 with big names. Tom Brady and Russell Wilson, just outside my top 5 quarterbacks, accompanied by Geno Smith of the Seattle Seahawks. How about Geno Smith outplaying Russell Wilson? How about Geno Smith defying the world of expectations? How about the win for Geno Smith? At number 5, it's not easy for me to say, and I don't know how long it will last, but at number 5, quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles, Jalen Hurts. I've not been a believer in Jalen. Any longtime listener of Will Cain knows that I think Jalen was a one-read quarterback at Oklahoma. He saw the first opening. If it wasn't there, it's tuck it and run. I didn't think it would translate into a guy that could read even more complicated defenses in the NFL. But Jalen, right now, certainly as a fantasy football quarterback and in the NFL, deserves his ranking at number 5. 243 yards passing, 90 yards running, 1 touchdown. Absolutely Lamar Jackson-esque performance against the Detroit Lions for Jalen Hurts. At number 4, Michael Irvin's pick for NFL MVP, the quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings, Kirk Cousins. Cousins, maybe better said, wide receiver Justin Jefferson, dominated the Green Bay Packers. 273 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. I think Jefferson ended up with something like, I don't know, between 150 and 170 yards in the first half. It was shocking what the Vikings did to the Packers. I don't know if Cousins is going to be an MVP like Irvin has offered, but if he is, he needs to at least share that award with Justin Jefferson. At number 3, quarterback of the Los Angeles Chargers, Justin Herbert. 279 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. He's a stud. He's an absolute stud, and he's part of the new wave that's taking over the NFL. I think these 3 quarterbacks right here could dominate. As soon as Brady has his say, which he will as this season goes along, as soon as Rodgers has his say, which he will as this season goes along, your top 3 could be dominated by these 3 quarterbacks, starting with Justin Herbert at number 3. At number 2, quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, Josh Allen. 91 QBR, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. But look, those 2 interceptions, even, come on. I mean, I'm even going to hardly penalize him for it. One wasn't his fault. The other, he makes too many amazing plays to make up with his arms and his legs and his grit and his determination and his will to make up for any of those few remaining mistakes. Josh Allen, I've told you at the beginning of the season, I believe, is your Super Bowl winning quarterback this season for the Buffalo Bills. But at number one, the best quarterback in the NFL 1 week in is Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. I mean, this was a virtuoso performance. Now, I could give you the stats, but I want to start with what he didn't have. He didn't have Tyreek Hill. He's down to his top receivers are Juju Smith-Schuster. I thought it would be Marquez Valdez-Scantling. It doesn't matter, though. He even got a little dinged up. It doesn't matter, though. Mahomes, 30 for 39. I think half of their offensive plays went for first downs. Did I read that correctly? Half of their offensive plays went for first downs. They torched the Cardinals, who were dumb enough to continue blitzing Patrick Mahomes, who threw 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Number one in Will's weekly quarterback depth chart, Patrick Mahomes. There you go. There's our walk around football. A season, well, it's over, even though it just got started.
We'll be right back with more of the Will Cain Podcast.
Story number 3. She is the host of The Truth with Lisa Booth. Go check it out wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify. Give it a rating. Leave her a comment. You're going to enjoy this conversation. She's incredibly bright and incredibly interesting. She's been all over the fight for personal integrity and freedom when it comes to the COVID vaccine and COVID policies. I wanted to have Lisa Booth on today to revisit, to not let this story fade away into the night, to have a sense of accountability, but not just accountability, but for you listening right now, how about some updated information? Should your kid get the vax? Is it safe for your kid to get the vax? What do we need to know today about COVID now that no one talks about COVID? Here is Lisa Booth. Lisa, I'm so glad to have you here on the Will Cain Podcast today. I don't know that you and I have gotten to hang out. We definitely have not gotten to hang out in person or virtually over a long period of time. Probably on television in short, little bite-sized chunks. But I'm glad to have you with me today for an extended period of time.
It's good to be out. Well, you live in Texas, right?
I do.
See, I'm Florida.
I do. And you're Florida.
We're the smart ones at Fox. We got out of the New York City stuff. So I lived there for 3 years. And then during COVID, I was like, I'm out. So it's nice to live there. In free states.
I lived there for 15 years. And at the tail end of COVID, I got out. And life is better on the outside.
Do you miss it at all?
No, but I have to go back every week.
Well, yeah,
I have to go back every week, so I don't have an opportunity to miss it. But no, I don't miss it whatsoever. I'm a Texan.
There you go.
I want to ask you this question. If you're sitting in the White House press gallery, if you're Peter Ducey or you're holding that job, is this a question that needs to be asked of Karine Jean-Pierre? Is your White House monkeypox response coordinator a Satanist? Is that a question that needs to be asked?
Well, I mean, honestly, I do think that the left has gotten kind of evil. I mean, you look at a party that supports abortion up until the moment of birth. These are people that think it's okay to castrate, you know, a 14-year-old boy or you know, to give a double mastectomy to a teenage girl. So I don't know. I mean, I think it tells you something, I would personally say, but It's interesting to me, but they've got a lot of interesting characters. I mean, you've got, you know, Rachel Levine, who is a man who puts on a dress, who says that he's a woman, who is, you know, in part leading some of their health stuff. So a lot of questionable characters over there.
Yeah, including now this guy. His name is Dimitri Damaskalos. He is, as I said, the Biden administration's White House National Monkeypox Response Deputy Coordinator. And I asked that question of Lisa, and I put this out there. It's appropriate to ask whether or not he's a Satanist, because there are numerous social media posts where you see that he has the pentagram tattooed all over his body, like massively on his chest, down the backside of an arm. And he's posing in I don't know how many social media pictures where he's standing in the middle of a pentagram. And I'm with you in that I hear you saying, look, if he's a Satanist, it's just worth knowing. I mean, I want him to have freedom of religion and I want him to have freedom of speech, but I think it's worth knowing for the American public if the Biden administration is leaning into the idea that one of our government representatives should be a Satanist.
What? But they're just going to lie to you. I mean, look at that question that was posed to her about, you know, because they're basically saying that if you question elections, because essentially what they want to happen is for Republicans and conservatives to be so fearful of questioning elections that they can do whatever the heck they want and we're not allowed to question it, right? I mean, they've essentially criminalized the questioning of elections with what we've seen them do to the January 6th defendants, right? So that's the whole objective for the left right now, is to instill the fear of God into conservatives for questioning elections. But then you have her, right? You remember she was questioned recently about that. She said that Stacey, you know, that election was unfair, that it was stolen. She has said this previously about elections. We know Nancy Pelosi tweeted that the 2016 election was hijacked. So they can they question every presidential election. I mean, this is what they do. They said 2016 was stolen. They said it was the Russians. So they can do it. But, you know, God help us if conservatives want to question election or want free and fair elections in this country. But, you know, and she's really an example of, the lack of why we need a merit-based system in this country, because, you know, she checked boxes and she's probably the worst press secretary maybe has ever been at the podium.
But your contention is that if you ask them whether or not their monkeypox response coordinator worships the devil, is they simply will, because they're very well versed in this and practiced at it, that they'll simply avoid the question, that they will lie.
Yeah, I mean, like, when do we get the truth about anything these days? You know, I mean, that's the entire reason I named my podcast "The Truth with Lisa." I mean, also, like, goes well, "Truth with Lisa Booth." You know, it sounds, goes off the you know, the tongue well. It's easy to say, but you know, like, we live in a post-truth world. Will, I mean, you know this. Like, when do we get the truth? I mean, you turn on, you read any of this stuff, most of it is not factual, and I think COVID really sort of brought that to the forefront of how much we are lied to by our own government. I mean, what truce has Keen Drew, whatever her name is, Pierre, I'm forgetting how to pronounce it. But I mean, when has she ever told us the truth from the podium, right? Like, all she does is deflect and lie. I mean, that's what her job is.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because her predecessor did the same, just more eloquently, just better. Jen Psaki was part of I saw this video mashup this morning, Letha, to your point about COVID, and we're living in a post-truth world. I saw this video mashup this morning. I put it up on my social media feed at Twitter. And it's just a good reminder, because the language, and I know this was an issue that was near and dear to your heart and you were at the forefront of, which I truly respect and appreciate. But the way that they spoke for, I don't know how long this went on, but it was a good 6 months. The way they spoke about people that chose not to take the vaccine is absolutely monstrous, but it was also post-truth. Even in the present tense, it was a lie. They said it was a pandemic of the unvaccinated. They vilified those that wouldn't get vaccinated. They said you were killing your fellow American. They compared you to a terrorist over and over again. I mean, it is really, really monstrous language, all predicated on the lie that if you're not vaccinated, then you're the one spreading COVID. And what's notable about that to me today is, Lisa, it's just gone. All those same characters are in the same spot. Biden's still the president. Psaki's now on cable television. Joy Reid still anchors a program. Jimmy Kimmel, who said some of the ugliest stuff, is still in late night television.
Well, and if you think about it, remember when Joe Biden went out there and he said essentially this was going to be the winner of death? And he said, you know, essentially beware of your unvaccinated neighbors, friends, you know, family members. And that was right before Christmas. Right. And he wanted people to not be invited to the Christmas dinner table. He wanted them to feel like they're an other. Right. And this is what we've really seen this Biden administration, what Joe Biden has done. We've seen this throughout history of the othering of people. I mean, he did that when he stood on that stage and he said that all 75 million Americans who voted for Trump are the others. Right. That they're the enemy of the state. And he did this to me, you know, to the unvaccinated as well. And if you remember when he went out there, I think it was maybe September when he went out there, that would have been 2021, right? When he came out and he gave that, you know, the huge employer mandate and really trying to force something like 100 million people to get the vaccine, to have no choice, otherwise they would lose their jobs. When he did that, we had already seen the Texas Democrats who came to Washington, D.C. to do their whole, you know, hoopla over the election law, which, you know, I mean, you're a Texan. After all that, they came with, you know, a pack of Corona, or they came with like Michelob Ultra and left with Corona. I mean, they turned D.C. into a super spreader event, and they were all allegedly vaccinated. And there's this study from, I think, the 4th of July in Provincetown, Massachusetts, I believe, where 75% of this cluster were all vaccinated people. So they knew when they were unrolling all this that it was a lie, that the vaccine did not stop the spread. He knew that when he went up on CNN during a town hall and said, you're not going to get COVID if you got the vaccine. But what they were doing was intentionally lying to people because they knew that more people would make the decision I made to not get vaccinated if they knew it didn't stop the spread.
But the thing is, you know, it kills me that they're all still sitting there in power, but they're still using the same exact tactic, but they're actually still using the exact same argument today. I just saw Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, say this past week that there's a quote unquote updated vaccine, which is a new name for a booster, because it's still predicated on the idea that you have to have the previous couple shots, but you get the updated vaccine. And she said it protects you from getting sick. That it can only be translated, by the way, as it protects you from transmission, which is a lie now, was a lie then, and a lie they continue to perpetuate. Why?
Well, preach, my friend, because I really do believe it's a control thing, right? During COVID, they were testing the boundaries. I mean, Anthony Fauci knew lockdowns weren't working, right? It ended up killing more people than it saved. I think it was something like 0.2% that it saved 1,800 people. And you look at how many, I mean, we don't even know the full scale of how many people died from overdoses, suicide, how many people are going to die in the future because of delayed care. So he knew that it wasn't working. He knew that lockdowns were a joke. They did it because he wanted to retain power. And I think they wanted Trump to lose the 2020 election. I mean, you know, Dr. Birx lied about data to President Trump because she was worried he wouldn't do a lockdown otherwise because of the election. So, you know, these people are evil and they're liars. And that booster that they're talking about, what, it was tested on 8 mice, right? These vaccines are, you know, they're not even vaccines, they're shots that they're trying to force upon Americans were developed in less than a year. Most vaccines have 5 to 10 years of safety data. And there was a peer-reviewed study not too long ago showing that it increases, I think, under 40, 25% increase for, you know, cardiac arrest, because we know that there's problems with things like myocarditis from the vaccines as well. So there was just not even an attempt to even tell the truth, to get to the bottom of it. And honestly, the media was really complicit in it as well, which was very frustrating to me.
So, Lisa, this was something I was excited to talk to you about today. I wanted to talk to you about COVID, among other topics, but you were so out front and strong when it came to freedom of choice, when it came to the vaccine. And I, in the alternate, Lisa, am fascinated by hit and run politics and hit and run media. What I mean by that is I want to do a series on fallout, on stories that went silent. I want to follow, for example, the BYU Duke race hoax into the future. It will go away now. It will magically disappear, like that language about the pandemic of the unvaccinated. It will magically disappear. And 1 year from now, we'll never remember this hoax that was perpetuated on America. And you can go through there's so many examples of that. If you remember, there was a kid at a Chicago Cubs game who was playing the circle game by all odds and probability. He gave the OK sign. The national media freaked out and said he was giving a white supremacist gesture. Theo Epstein, the GM of the Chicago Cubs, said he shuddered when he saw that image. No accountability. Nothing ever happened with that story. And it just disappears, because this is what we do in your characterization in the post-truth world. We hit and run. We move on. And then you never have to face the truth. But with you today, I wanted to go through some of the truths that we have allowed to just fade into the night when it comes to COVID. And you've begun to bring up one when it comes to long-term fallout of the vaccine. We don't know. We're just beginning to gather data, but no one is interested. And I find it fascinating that last week we saw a clip of Dr. Fauci when it came to a potential vaccine for AIDS. I'm sure you saw this. It was a clip from, I believe, the late 80s, early 90s. And Fauci's own words said, I don't know about a vaccine for AIDS because we don't know what the effects are 1 year from now. We don't know what the effects are 10 years from now. We don't know what the effects would be 20 years from now on an untested vaccine. But when it comes to COVID, he nor the media has no interest in understanding or even researching the long-term effects of the vaccine.
Well, absolutely. Well, I mean, at this point, they're trying to, you know, there was a couple articles recently trying to pin it on, you know, President Trump, right? And so maybe they'll continue to try to do that in the future. The more daylight we get and the more transparency there is on what these vaccines actually do to people. But I mean, we're not even being told that we don't actually even know how many people died from COVID. I mean, we know absolutely people died from COVID. We all have, colleagues, you know, friends who have had that, you know, family members or people that they know. So we know that's an absolute fact. But remember, they didn't really even start accounting from versus with COVID for hospitalizations until Joe Biden took office. And this is something a lot of us were saying during COVID is that we need to differentiate, you know, are you going in with appendicitis or, you know, whatever, and you just happen to have COVID. And then, you know, for whatever reason, the appendicitis takes you and then it's a COVID death, right? Or there was an instance, I think a guy got into a motorcycle crash, had COVID, and it was a COVID death, right? And I think there was a lot of hospitals and medical systems that were incentivized to, you know, capture these COVID hospitalizations and deaths for monetary purposes. But we don't even know the full scale, how many people actually died from COVID versus from something else and they happen to have COVID. I mean, we know when they started actually taking a look at that for hospitalizations, those numbers changed dramatically, who was actually in the hospital because the COVID drove them to the hospital versus they're already there and they just happen to have COVID. So there's just a mountain of things that we don't have the truth yet. And I think a lot of these people, because to your point, they're still in charge, they don't want to get to the truth because it's going to be an indictment of them.
Yeah, that has to be the answer. I mean, it's really stunning to sit here. We're as you pointed out, I think we're a year into the mandate of whatever it may be. We're a year and a half into access to the vaccine. And there's so little interest in this widespread, widely used medicine. Meaning, no one, all you're supposed to hear is, well, doctors recommend it. You know, if I want to, I see Moderna advertising at the U.S. Open. I see Pfizer ads running on television. I don't ever see, by the way, the list of potential side effects or long-term risks that you would if Viagra were being advertised on television. You don't ever see the long list of sped up 2.5 times speed voice telling you, be careful if you have this condition or that condition. It's been exempted from liability, accountability, and any pursuit of the knowledge. Your and I conversation right now, which is simply saying, hey, you know what? We should know more. We'll be flagged. We'll almost certainly be flagged on whatever podcast platform this is distributed or whatever video platform this is shown. I am sure at the bottom of our conversation, there will be some disclaimer and link to a site that tells you don't wonder about that information. Just click here and you'll be told everything is fine.
Well, and what blows my mind is the lies were really starting to be told at the very beginning of all this. I mean, you can go back even after the 15 days to slow the spread, and you have people like Dr. John Ioannidis of Stanford who wrote in Stat News about how we're making massive public policy decisions off of terrible data, because originally the fatality rates were so skewed because we weren't testing everyone. So we were missing the people who had COVID by like 10 to 65 fold. And so what that means is if you're only capturing, you know, a handful of these cases and a lot of those people are dying because these are the people who are ending up in the hospital, your fatality rate's way higher than it actually is. Right. And so he was making this case in Stat News. And I read that and I'm like, you're the only dude that makes sense to me. Like, literally everyone else sounds like a crazy person. And this guy makes sense. So, you know, I started asking him questions. And then I didn't have a TV show. I didn't have a podcast at this time. So I got 15 days after the 15 days to slow the spread. I got the White House on record to say that we need to do the seroprevalence studies and to really get a better idea of what, you know, how many people have had it, how many people are actually dying from that to get a better baseline. They said they were going to do it. They never did it. And I started writing. I wrote a column in The Hill as well. And really it was just, I felt like, I think there's like a C.S. Lewis quote where, you know, when everyone is running towards the cliff, the person walking away is the crazy one, you know? And I felt like I was just trying to basically shout from the rooftops that, you know, what we're being told is not true. And everyone was operating in fear and chaos instead of just saying, hey, like, let's just take a moment and really dig in. And so really from the beginning, we were told a lot of lies.
And still being told those lies. And this is the point of this conversation, is not to have a 2-year-old or 18-month-old conversation, but to bring back some accountability and thought to something that we were not just encouraged, but punished if we had decided to indulge in that thought over the past 18 months. And so here's the most recent example to me that's really stood out.
Yeah.
So you asked me at the beginning of our conversation if I miss New York City. I do not, but I still have to go there. And because I'm there, sometimes when I'm streaming, before football season started, I was on a binge of 1883. So, you know, when you're streaming something, it'll feed you local ads. So I was being fed local New York City ads. And I was appalled that there is this advertisement series running at the direction of New York Governor Kathy Hochul, where it's an encouragement to get your children vaccinated. And in it, it features pediatricians. And so these pediatricians are giving you anecdotal stories. They're just telling you their story. They're not giving you medical advice. I mean, in that they're not employing data. They say stuff like this. They say, I got my kids vaccinated. Every pediatrician I know has gotten their kids vaccinated. And then get this statement. There are no long-term negative effects of the COVID-19 vaccine on children, and we do not expect any. That's a literal line in this advertisement running in New York from a pediatrician, which, by the way, I think that's malpractice right there. I think you should have your medical license yanked if you have the gall to say that. You have no idea the long-term effects. But I just want to put that side by side with this news. The United Kingdom Health Security Agency in the past 2 weeks has pulled the vaccine and made it banned to give to children under 5. And it's no longer offered. You can't get it updated. There's no place you can go get it. Although not banned, you can't get it for kids 5 to 11 years old. So the UK is paying attention to some data or science, finally, and pulling it away from kids, while in New York, they're running ads where all a pediatrician says to you is, hey, everybody's doing it.
Well, and what's sad is we know that these children aren't really at risk from COVID, even as a 30. Like I say I'm like youngish because I'm 37. So it's like, you know, I'm kind of close to 40. And I'm like not really like young anymore, but ish, you know, but even at 37 being youngish, COVID was never a threat to my life statistically. And so I found surprising is I feel like a lot of the doctors were actually some of the least informed, because like how many doctors actually dig into the data, right? How many they just sort of follow the public health protocol, right? A lot of them weren't really, and there were some obviously who were doing their due diligence. But so many, I had so many people try to persuade me to get it. And then upon asking additional questions, like they'd be like, oh, save your neighbors, your family. And I'd be like, well, you know, like everyone seems to be spreading it regardless of vaccination. They're like, well, you know, that's true. And I'm like, well, then why are you telling me to get this thing? And then, you know, and then I'd be like, well, I'm not at risk statistically. And they'd be like, oh, that's true. And I'm like, well, then why are you trying to force something on me that I don't need, even to your own admission? And so what I really did, which I found really helpful, was just identified a group of people who I thought were smart, who were making good points, and then just went to them for information. And I would pose a lot of the same questions to them to see what they had to say. And not a single person could articulate to me, as a healthy 37-year-old, I almost said 73, as a healthy 37-year-old, I needed to get vaccinated, you know? And then when they started shoving it down our throats, I was like, no, because now it's about freedom. Right now, this is about tyranny that's being imposed on our country. Now, this is about something bigger. And so that's why I was like, I went on Dan Bongino and I was like, this is a middle finger to Joe Biden. You know, like I'm an American. I live in a free country. Like the hell if you're going to tell me I need to inject something in my body that I don't need. You know, now it's about something more. And, you know, and then I think Dan was like, I hope it's a double barrel. So it started with just not needing it and it not making sense, and certainly doesn't make sense for kids. And then it turned into like this bigger fight for freedom.
By the way, I think 37, how about this? It's younger than it used to be. I think that, like, you know how they used to say, what did they say, 50's the new 40 or 40's the new 30? You know, I think in the modern age of a slowed down approach to adulthood, you're probably only like, what, 25?
I appreciate that.
In the whole, In the whole grand scheme of things, were this the 90s, you're like 25.
I appreciate it. I will take that, you know. It's like, you know, each year you start inching closer to 40, you're like, oh, it kind of hurts a lot, you know.
But. Hey, it's kind of true, though, if you think about it. I just read this article about the regression of adulthood and that how, first of all, people are hanging on to childish things much longer, you know, so whatever it may be, like, of course, video games, but they're hanging on to even toys and, you know, putting them on their shelves of their office or whatever it may be and playing with toys. And it's like this delayed adulthood has. It's really obviously people living at home longer, waiting to be fully employed till later in life, waiting to have children until later in life, waiting to take on responsibility until later in life. I think that I don't know if it's cultural. I don't know if it's unique to America, but there definitely is this. And I'm not accusing you of it, by the way. I'm just saying there is this regression of adulthood. There's this like late onset adulting going on in America.
Also, speaking of that, I literally just realized that I have like a ring light and I did it backwards, so it's like not even working right now. If I flipped it, it probably would make a heck of a lot of difference, but I just realized this. So, but, you know, I do think, like, I think especially as women, I do think that we're lied to. Actually, let me see if I can do this on camera without, how do we, is it better? Now I probably look crazy. See, look at the difference lighting makes, people, but
It's all an illusion.
But no, I do think, like, especially as women, I think that there is like this lie that we're told. And I think to some degree I sort of bought into it. I'm going to try to, this is probably all on camera. It's fine. But yeah, see, people, lighting matters when you work in television. We're trying, you know, but I do think like there's this lie that we're told, right? You know, like, oh, be a boss woman, work, 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 you know, you can do whatever. And there's really sort of, and I shouldn't have ever bought into that because I come from, my parents have been married for over 40 something years, like legitimately love each other, still hold hands, like beautiful, beautiful marriage, you know, so I was blessed to have been raised with that. But I do think we're sort of like told this lie because it's a lot easier to get more hours out of us when, you know, you don't have a family, you're not married, you're not answering to anything else besides this like corporation or company that you're working for. So I do think I kind of bought into it a little bit. And then during COVID, I just sort of had this like enlightening, you know, thing and sort of like an epiphany of just sort of realizing that, you know, maybe work's not the end all be all to life, you know?
Oh, what's the lie? I'm curious about that. You said we were sold this like, lie. What is the lie?
Yeah, like, I think it's to like, to delay having a family, right? That somehow work brings more value to your life than having kids or having a husband. I don't think that's the case. And I say that as someone who like loves what I do. Like I love working in television. I love my podcast. I really genuinely enjoy what I do for a career. But at the end of the day, like we could get canceled, right? I'm sure half the things I've said on this podcast could potentially get me fired, you know? And like every time I'm out on TV, I'm sure I'm saying things that, you know, people are probably pulling their hair out and wanting to can me. So, you know, and then if it goes away, what are you left with, right? And I think previously before COVID, I was putting too much of an emphasis on trying to like climb that ladder and like, oh, I want a show, I want this or that. And then during COVID, I just sort of realized, because you have that stillness that you normally don't have in life where you're sort of having to stop and reflect and think and, you know, not always be on the run like you are typically in life. And I just sort of realized that maybe I've been doing it wrong a little bit.
Oh, I love this conversation. I didn't anticipate this conversation with you, but if I might, as a man, then
yeah,
offer my two perspectives on that lie. I think that first of all, everyone is told one lie, and that is that you can have it all, that there's not competing choices in life, that you have infinite time and infinite energy, and you don't. You know, if you choose A, sometimes you forego B. And so, therefore, every human being has to understand a balance and competition of choices. But the lie that might be more particular, I think, to women is, and this isn't a judgment on those that choose to work, but rather a judgment on the cultural perspective that if you choose to raise a family, that is somehow a lesser choice. I really resent that the United States of America sort of went down this path. I don't know when it started in the 60s or 70s, but it's like the stay-at-home mom was somehow seen as mailing it in. You know, that she didn't live up to her full potential and ambition, where the woman that went to work did. And I'm not saying that the woman that went to work work didn't. But I'm saying that I know from personal experience that raising children is A, very hard, and B, so very valuable to an individual, to a family, and to a culture. And so I just don't like that we've made that choice somehow the slacker choice, the less respectable choice for women.
Well, you know, my mom stayed home and she raised four. There's four of us. You know, I was the, you know, one girl out of three brothers, which probably is a lot of why I am the way I am. But, you know, just getting like beat up and making you tough and stuff. But, you know, like if I'm a fraction of the woman my mom is, I'm fine in life. You know, like she is the best mom. She is just literally one of the best human beings. Like she takes care of my aunt who's special needs and who lives at home. She took care of my grandfather when he was passing away. She took care of my uncle when he had cancer. I mean, she's just the most devoted, loyal, like loving, strong, smart woman. So I totally agree with you in the sense of, you know, look, there's no wrong or right, you know, but I do think that family is everything in life, like absolutely everything, you know, like work is whatever, everything else is whatever, you know, family is everything. And like my heart actually breaks for people who don't have that sort of support system in life because I don't know how they do it. I mean, I was a hellion, you know, growing up, like so independent, you know, stubborn, if you can imagine, you know, like I was strong-willed, always have been. And if I didn't have these two
I bet
parents,
that's true.
Yeah, like, you know, just trying to veer off, my parents like, nope, back on path. You know, if I didn't have them sort of just kind of kicking me in the butt and putting me back on, you know, the straight and narrow, like I could see how people sort of veer off into, you know, not living to their fullest potential, right?
Well, first of all, your mom sounds awesome. And I would offer up as my illustration of this, that look, if I can be half as good, or let's not be hyperbolic. If I can be as good, if I can be as good at my job as my wife is at raising my two children, and making this home for us, then I will be incredible at this job. But I'm not convinced that even if I am that good at this job, it's as valuable as what she is doing for my family, for our community. And I'll tell you this, and I don't want to go into details because I think I'm not supposed to in a lot of ways, but she does a lot of volunteering on top of being a mother. And part of that volunteering, Lisa, is being involved in families that aren't, or rather the lives of children who aren't in the situation of getting to have a family, as you just described, who certainly don't have fathers and often don't have mothers. And it is so sad, so destructive. It'll make you not your eyes water, but it'll make your tears flow to see what happens with these children that live in the foster system or whatever the system may be that experience nothing but a life of kind of rejection, right? From the people that you would hope to come into this world needing love from the most.
Well, you know, I think, and your wife sounds like an incredible person, and you are really good at your job. Like, I'm not just tooting your own horn because I'm on your podcast right now, but you're really talented and I respect you. You tell the truth. You're unafraid. And, you know, you ask phenomenal questions. You are actually really good. So your wife must be really awesome. You know?
But, she is. Yeah. She is. Thank
you. She must be amazing, you know. But, you know, you look at the fact that nearly just having a two-parent home just sets a kid on a totally different direction. Like, not even absent their education level, absent the income level, just having that support system makes a world of a difference for kids. I mean, you're more susceptible to stuff when you don't have that system of support, the people looking out for you. So, I mean, if you really think about it, probably so many of our problems as a country and a society would be solved if we just emphasized the family more. And we said, hey, having a family is a good thing. Loving your kids is a good thing. Being around is a good thing. You know, my dad worked really hard. He's an incredibly successful guy. He works his butt off, incredible work ethic, but he never missed anything that was important for us. He made every game I had. He coached my basketball. He did travel stuff with me. Even with his, you know, big job, he never missed anything. And so I just, you know, I really, family is just absolutely everything in life.
Well, you just broke my heart because I'm gone every weekend to host Fox and Friends in New York, missing every game. But I am a avid devotee to practice, Lisa. I don't miss a practice during the week.
But see, there you go. You're still showing up and being, and they're going to look out for practice and know that you're there. And that's going to mean something to them later in life. So don't, I didn't mean that to make any, you know. But you're also providing a great life.
By the way, at the end
them.
Of this conversation, Stop. I'll walk away. We'll turn the microphones off, and it'll be all I think about. I promise
no,
you.
No, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it. I swear I would never. I didn't. I think you sound like a great dad and a great husband, so I would not.
But to your point, you know, how about this? I don't know if you were familiar with my career before I joined Fox, but like, I mean, everybody at Fox is a racist. You know, that's the way it works. You're Fox, you must be a racist. But I had a long history of being called a racist before I got to Fox because I was at ESPN and I talked about racial issues often when it came to sports. But here's what I would say. The publicly branded racist Will Cain actually cares very, very much about Black America, like very, very much. And what I would say is, what you just laid out is the single greatest thing that can be done to help the status of individuals and the population as a whole that is Black America. If we gave as much attention to family structure, 70% of kids in Black America are raised in homes without a father. If that got as much attention and focus on the solution as systemic racism, you could actually make quantifiable positive change in people's lives.
Well, I don't think the left really wants to make positive changes in people's lives. And in fact, I think they want people to suffer and to be more as beholden to government as they can possibly make them. I mean, look at COVID, right? So Walmart, you're cool, you can stay open, but if you have a family-run business that's been passed down generation to generation, you're done, right? You lose your job, you can't feed your kids, you're, you know, basically completely screwed financially, maybe for the rest of your life, you know, and that PPP loan, you're probably gonna have to pay taxes on it later or whatever, right? So they want people to be subjugated. I mean, I think this is the whole emphasis of the left. Like, they paid people to stay home because they want more people. And then now look at our work culture now. Nobody wants to work. There's like this quiet quitting stuff, right? So they want this stuff culturally to happen where people are beholden to the federal government. That's why they don't believe in school choice. I mean, what a world of a difference would it make is one, like we were talking about with the support of the family system and building the family infrastructure and, you know, supporting that as a, you know, a government of, you know, two parent home gets, you know, whatever. But point being is they don't want that because they know the impact of it. And school choice, they don't want because they know that that would make a world of a difference for so many kids across America to be able to have the parents say, hey, I'm going to take my kids' tax dollars to this school because this is going to give them the opportunity that they can't in this, you know, terrible district that's based entirely on zip code. And, you know, a kid that is going to have a really heck of a time trying to get any sort of education.
Oh, Lisa, you're preaching my sermon here. That, you know, and I lived that in New York City because my kids went to charter schools. My kids went to charter schools in New York City, and I saw directly the impact of those charter schools on Black and brown and poor children. The school they went to was 99% Black and brown, 75% free and reduced lunch. And it was, they were achieving at the highest of levels. Meanwhile, the local PS across the street was failure factories. They were flunking these kids at like, in not just like enormous rates, like you, like 1% passing. Like you can't even comprehend the rate of failure were you to go to school just across the street. So I'm 100% with you. By the way, do you think the work thing really interests me as well, what you said, this sort of disincentive of work culture? It's clearly something that's going on. You know, like I think I don't know it, you know, verse for verse, but in the Communist Manifesto, Marx would talk about living a life of leisure, that the best version of life to live is one of hunting and fishing. I think he literally used those endeavors, which I enjoy. But like the man should aspire to progress to a point of having his basic needs met so that he can live that life of leisure more and not have a life burdened by work. Do you think what we see as America clearly moves into a phase where it's like work is disincentivized, and I think we have a culture that reflects that now. Do you think that's a watered down, and nobody's walking around quoting Marx, right? But do you think that's the fulfillment of an ideological vision, or is it more Machiavellian, as you described, where it's just a tool for the better accumulation of power?
I think it's ideological. I mean, I am of a firm belief that the left wants to take away any purpose from our lives. I think they truly want people to not have religion, to not have a family, to be completely isolated, alone, and vulnerable and reliant upon the government and needing the government. And I think the more, I mean, think about it. if you're completely fulfilled in your life, if you believe in God, if you have a family, if you feel like your life has purpose, you are rooted in something, you're rooted, you're much less easily persuadable, right? Because you have your head on straight, you have an anchor, you know what you're doing. And if you have no purpose, you're completely malleable. And so I think that's the whole intent of the left. And, you know, we talked about the school stuff a little bit. You know, one silver lining in the hell that was COVID and the, you know, potentially irreparable damage it did to our country as a society and even just what America used to stand for as a, you know, freedom-loving place, a beacon of freedom, which we aren't anymore, or, you know, might be a communist state. But the only silver lining in what happened with COVID is that parents were exposed to what their kids were being taught. And then the result of that is the fact that you have so many parents who pull their kids out of public school. Support for school choice has risen exponentially. And so I think that we have a chance as, where Republicans have a chance to try to break that lockstep with the, you know, public education system and the teachers union, who clearly couldn't care less about students, right? You know, they didn't care that kids weren't learning, depressed, or, you know, suicidal, and more were committing suicide. They just wanted to line their own pockets. Which is really just tells you more about the left. But I think if there's any silver lining, it's maybe that, and then potentially the school system's changing and to lessen that indoctrination that's been happening for so long.
Yeah, I'm thinking back about that thing you said about the desire to rip out fulfillment. And to me, I guess what I think is it's, you know, the garbage man wants there to be garbage. It is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's job justification. He needs it. You know, every job needs its market met. And the job market for a politician is need. So the person who has purpose and fulfillment and has a job has less need from government. And so I think what you're looking at there is politicians feeding their own job justification, you know. And then I mean, it's more sinister than that, because it's not simply like, hey, I need my next paycheck. It is filling that void in them of wanting more and more power, right? So the more I need them, the more power they have. And outside of that, I think the biggest tool is division. So I'm going to go full circle now as we head towards the finish line. So, you know, I started talking to you about that video of politicians and late night comedians and cable news hosts vilifying the unvaccinated. And I was listening to the language, Lisa, and you know what was fascinating to me about it? It sounded, if it wasn't verse for verse, it rhymed at least with what you heard from Joe Biden when he spoke about the threat that quote unquote MAGA Republicans represent to our democracy. The unvaccinated represented a threat to our overwhelmed hospitals and our lives, and MAGA Republicans represent a threat to our democracy. The same exact rhetorical trick, you know, what are we, 8 months removed, now applied to a different target, I would suggest for the same purpose, division to accumulate power.
Well, exactly. And you talked earlier about, you know, people forgetting. I will never forget. I will never forget how people that were supposed to be, you know, colleagues maybe treated me. I'll never forget how the media treated me. I'll never forget how my own government treated me. I'll never forget how people who I thought were friends treated me and turning their backs on me for simply making a decision that didn't even impact the public. I just didn't need. So I will never forget. I will never trust government again. That changed me. But regarding, you know, Joe Biden, I think it's even more sinister than that, in a sense of, you know, to tie two things together. If you looked at that Rasmussen polling about how the left viewed the unvaccinated, almost half of them wanted to put me in a government facility to put me into some sort of camp. Like, I'm serious. And so I am actually of the belief that if they could, simply because we share different opinions and a different ideology, I would be in a camp someplace. I think we're on the cusp of that, to be perfectly honest. I know that sounds, you know, whatever, but you've got the former CIA director saying that Trump supporters are worse than ISIS. You've got the DHS secretary essentially saying similar. And then you had Kamala Harris recently sit down with Chuck Todd, you know, basically saying that we have to defend against all, you know, enemies, even domestic. Right. And so they actually look at us as if we're as bad as ISIS. And if they think that we're as bad as ISIS, wouldn't that mean that they could use the full tools that we used against terrorists abroad here at home to us? And so I think this is a real thing. And I think too many people have their eyes closed to what's going on in the country. And if Democrats are to win this November, What do you think they're going to do? They're going to pack the Supreme Court. They're going to add seats. They're going to federalize elections. We will never win elections again. It's over. America's over. And I don't mean that to be hyperbolic. I mean, what we saw during COVID, which is part of the reason why I just got, with every fiber of my being, was trying to scream through the rooftop about what was happening and the lies we were being told. That was real. It's like, I see this, right? And I feel it. And I look at the threats that we're facing. This is really something that people need to have their eyes wide open to what's ahead and what could be ahead if more Americans don't start standing up for what is right and standing against what is wrong.
Well, I don't think you sound like, or you shouldn't sound to anyone like a wingnut on those predictions. Because first,
one,
well,
along with the anti-vaxxer, you're the racist. I'm the anti-vaxxer, so you know, whatever. And of course, you're not. I'm just saying that because you had said previously, in case someone wants to try to clip this in a nasty manner, he is not.
What a beautiful couple.
Yeah.
You know what I would say is COVID. First of all, it washed away a ton of quote unquote conspiracies. It also washed away any belief that you can kind of surf down the lane of that'll never happen. Like, it just showed me, I think it showed a lot of us, like, look, you want to know why a population will go along with anything? Here, now you can experience it. And after that experience, I think after the last 2 years, COVID and a whole host of issues, honestly, I no longer wonder how the German population went along, you know, with the Third Reich. It's always something to wonder, like, how did normal people just go, yeah, this is who we are? I understand how a population can be lost. And the second thing is, to your point, I mean, the former director of the CIA just said a month ago, that Republicans were a greater existential threat to the freedom-loving world, to your point, than any radical extremist he'd ever encountered, which you would presume encompasses ISIS and Al Qaeda and the Taliban. He puts Republicans number one. Do I think if we are, you and I, there, therefore, then an existential threat to America, that he would readily place us in jail and get the population, or at least a significant percentage of the population, to go along with it? Yes. I don't think that's something that can only be said by a wingnut.
Well, I think the only things that are preventing this at this current moment is, one, our founding fathers, the founding generation, were brilliant in the way that they put together this country and they designed our nation and the Constitution and the checks and balances that we hold there, or that we have, that are barely hanging on, right? And we've seen them. They're trying to take a battering ram to all of our institutions. We saw that with the leak of the Supreme Court, trying to discredit everything so that they no longer have value or meaning, or people don't respect them any longer. But the two most important things are the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, which is why they're first and second. And if you look at what the Nazis did, if you look at throughout history what they did in Cuba, you know, what these communist regimes do is they essentially take away freedom of speech. They take away a free press, right? It's all indoctrination. The government runs the media, which is essentially kind of what we have now. And they make it impossible for the truth to get out there. They do their best to make it impossible for the truth to get out there, which you're talking about. We're going to get flagged on YouTube. They'll probably take this down, right? You probably can't even put this up on YouTube, to be perfectly honest.
I don't know.
True,
that'll be interesting.
You know, like, or yeah. Like, you know, or like Donald Trump's banned on Twitter, the former president of the United States. It's insane. And then the second is guns. And you see what they do. You can go throughout. They take away the Second Amendment. They take away, I think the Taliban did that when they took back over a year ago. And so these are that you disarm a population and you feed them with lies and you make it impossible for the truth to get out. And we are, you know, really in a battle right now for these two things, to keep the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, and to preserve just these basic freedoms that the founding generation had the foresight to put into place. But I mean, we are, you know, it's like, I always joke around because I watch The Bachelor and a bunch of terrible things, but it's always like, oh, this is the most dramatic season ever, which maybe it actually is. But, you know, we're always like, oh, this is the most important election ever. And, you know, I really believe that if Republicans don't regain power, it might be over. And I really do think that if we have a free and fair election for the midterms, a lot of the polls are in full rise right now. Everyone's looking at registered voter polls, which are garbage. You look at the likely voter surveys. I think where it currently stands now, Republicans will win back the House, pick up a Senate seat or two, and maybe pick up a couple of gubernatorial races. you know, that's if we don't see some of the shenanigans we saw, like the FBI colluding with big tech to, you know, stifle information and, you know, censorship and this, that, and the other that we've seen, or, you know, the mail-in ballot, you know, garbage. But, you know, people just need to know that if there was ever a time to speak up and speak out, it is now. And you cannot be afraid because you may never have a chance again. So, like, it's kind of now or never. So,
well, it'll be interesting to see if this video is taken down, by the way, because all we neglected to do was blindly accept the conclusion. We did just ask for more information and an open dialogue about the subject. It'll be interesting then if that dialogue is actually silenced and censored. Hey, listen, I used to say this. I've said this before. Anybody can go on TV and talk for 30 seconds. Literally anybody can do. Most people can do a cable news hit. It's harder. You ramp it up another level when you do a debate, right? When you have a panel back and forth. And I think the best version of that, quite honestly, is ESPN's First Take, where you have a 10-minute debate. That's very rare. And that takes another level of ability. Having a long form conversation with somebody like you and I just had, or hosting a podcast or solo radio, where you really have time to hear what somebody has to say, is the ultimate in a revelation of how somebody thinks and takes most talent. I'm really impressed. This is the most I've got to hear from you. Most I've ever got to hear from you have this conversation. You're incredibly good as well. I think everybody should check out The Truth with Lisa Booth.
Thank you.
And I hope we get to do this again sometime.
Yeah, I think I had a slow start because I was rushing to get ready. And so I sat down. I was like, I appreciate that. I have a ton of respect for you. I really do think that you're very talented and you speak the truth. And I feel like you are awake to the threats we're facing and, you know, see the world as it is. So I respect you and I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you, Lisa.
And I'm glad we'll figured out the lighting system at some point during that.
I think that's when you'll know. You can see this on YouTube and figure out the lighting system of whether or not we got censored.
Yeah, let us know.
All right, thanks, Lisa.
Exactly. Bye, Will. Take care. Bye.
Bye. There you go. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Lisa Booth. Again, it's The Truth with Lisa Booth. Go check that out. Also, while you're checking that out, leave us a review. If you think it's worthwhile, I'll appreciate it if you give us 5 stars. They all help, because what it does is push the podcast in front of new eyes, people looking to discover more of the truth. When you leave a comment or you leave a rating, you help us find new members of this community. And you can also do it the old-fashioned way. Copy and paste the link and text it to a buddy. I appreciate you, as always, being here. I will see you again on Friday.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day. Featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.